When you start investing in stocks, you seek investment advice. When you seek investment advice, you go to the internet. When you go to the internet, you start believing all the wacky correlations spouted by armchair analysts.
Sell, 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 sell.
When you start believing those wacky correlations, you start buying and selling stocks based on butter production in Bangladesh. When you start buying and selling stocks based on butter production in Bangladesh, you offend your lactose intolerant girlfriend, who in turn moves out. When your girlfriend moves out, you can't afford rent on your own because all your money is tied up in the stock market. When you can't afford rent on your own, you become homeless and alone.
Thank you.
Don't become homeless and alone. Get rid of financial advice from armchair analysts and upgrade to Money Talks.
This is Money Talks.
We're back. You're listening to Money Talks. I'm Troy Harmon here with Nick Antonucci and Jacob Keene.
After after that intro, do we need to go ahead and take another break?
It is quite long. All right, guys. Well, enough dog talk. Let's move on. We talked a lot earlier in the show about market decline, volatility. And, you know, isn't it strange that we worry about volatility when it goes against the markets and not so much when we're making money? Nobody stands around wringing their hands because they made too much money in the stock market, right?
Sure.
It's only when you see big declines like the 2.5% we saw in a single day this week that people start talking volatility. But, you know, we've already hit on a few of these. Really, the one that seems to be kicking off most of the grief is the tariff, right? It seems as if we might be getting in the middle of a trade war, tariff war, with China most specifically, but it's also catching up a lot of other folks, a lot of other countries and their practices in the middle of it. And I think the retaliation that we saw from China is what really seems to be causing the biggest downturns in the market.
The thing I think about when I consider, you know, China firing back on us with their own tariffs is, who can sustain it long? Who's gonna suffer the bigger impact in this situation? And I think it's probably going to be China.
Well, I mean, the country that I guess if we were reliant on the goods from China, meaning that if they were foodstuffs or things that we couldn't replace elsewhere.
I think China relies on us much more, buying their products and importing their products than we do, right. You know, exporting or a lot of that stuff we potentially could get from other countries.
Right, but no matter what, I mean, a trade war doesn't benefit either country anyone that's in the middle of it.
I think it's a difficult equation overall, because I think from an economic perspective, China would be hurt more, but we do have more developed capital markets. So if you talk about targeting individual companies and pressuring the stock market, like, it feels like China's been able to do of late. And you have kind of an administration that has been using the stock market as their scoreboard. Then, you know, how much of an effect does that have, you know, to maybe back off, you know, some of the pressure that we put on them? It seems like they were pretty aggressive with their counterpunch in putting those tariffs on soybeans.
Yep.
When there's not even enough supply in the rest of the world.
Right.
In soybeans. I mean, U.S. is the dominant, like, that's their number one agricultural export.
Right. Well, and that's the thing that's really interesting to me is, you know, we're gonna put a tariff on aluminum and steel, 25% on the steel, 10% on the aluminum. It's nothing that it, you know, it's not a life or death issue for the people of China. In fact, you know, we don't even buy that much of it from them specifically. But when they do have heightened prices, or rather lower prices, what you wind up seeing is, you know, they can sell it elsewhere and it impacts the overall global trade. But again, you know, they put their immediate action or counteraction, I guess you'd call it at this point, was to hit agricultural things.
Mm-hmm.
They did hit soybeans initially. They also talked about fruits and various other things that they import from us. Probably because it's one of those things that they buy in big quantities.
Well, I think another part of the strategy is, if you think about the states that are affected by that, are mainly states that voted for Trump. So they know midterm elections are coming up.
Oh, yeah.
If you can hit the Midwest, which is his stronghold, you know, maybe there's some I think what's interesting to me is I don't know about you guys, but I don't really have an idea of what the end game is from D.C. right now. And I've seen, you know, interviews. It seemed like Kudlow the other day was actually trying to ease the market. Look, like, this is a negotiation tactic. We are free traders as an administration. But we don't really know what they're is it mainly focused on, you know, IP? Is it like – is it actually a trade issue? Do you guys have any?
No, but that is a topic that has become more and more popular. Is, as you just said, it being an IP issue.
And we mean intellectual property, so like patents and stuff. The violation of patents. It's like
and look at what kind of spurred a lot of this. Obviously, you know, the talk is something that Trump ran on, but if you look at when he blocked the merger or the between Qualcomm and
Broadcom.
Right.
I feel like that's where things really kicked off the tensions.
Right.
Yeah, well, that was a lot of it. I think it was probably just timing. I think if you look, he's probably got a list of things. He's made campaign promises. He got the first couple out of the way. You know, he got tax reform.
Part one.
Part one, I guess. Whatever part two is going to be,
I'm not sure.
We'll see. But then he's just moved on. This is the next step on the list. So it shouldn't be a huge surprise to us that this is coming. But you guys touched on something. Larry Kudlow. Larry Kudlow has never been a fan of tariffs. He even talked about it before he was named his economic advisor. And now he's in the uncomfortable position to have to sell this whole concept as, you know, Jacob, you pointed out, this is a negotiation tactic. I truly believe that is the case, that he's just using this to get some change. Nobody's ever checked China on some of the things that they do on global
trade. You can still buy $20 fake Nike shoes from Alibaba pretty easily.
Allegedly.
No doubt. So, you know, some of the companies we've seen that are in those industries have actually benefited the steel industry. You know, we saw those stock prices rise.
Look it up. Then you've got on the other side, you got like Boeing. Hit hard.
Yeah, but they haven't really. I think they rebounded pretty quick because they haven't been discussed specifically. The fear is that the Chinese, who have been buying lots of airplanes lately,
they'll switch over to Airbus.
Will, yeah. I mean, they have other options, right?
Yeah, and I think Boeing's even come out and said, hey, you know, we want to meet with the president. We want to meet with China and discuss what's going on here, obviously.
Right. Well, usually they'll the way that both sides have been doing this is they talk about the tariffs and then they give like 28 days to have hearings and listen to what their people the will of their people, and then they make the final decision. Just so happens that nobody's blinked.
It's like the pre-boxing fight press conference.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
They haven't actually fought yet. They're just saying what they're going to do to each other.
When did these take place? Like, has there been any timeline discussed on any of this?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's more just submit your opinion.
Yeah.
Kind of approach, but I said it before the break. Larry Kudlow, he's new.
Right.
We
lots of turnover.
And when it was announced that his predecessor was stepping down, the market actually got a little bit volatile that day as
well. Yeah, sure. I mean, how can you not? When have we ever had this much turnover?
Yeah, we've got, 22 new cabinet members?
Six fired, 16 resigned.
Wow. Yeah.
And that's just in, you know, a year and 3, 4, or 5 months.
I mean, do I make the easy joke here that we saw I'm on The Apprentice?
And you're right.
He was firing somebody like once a week.
It just carries over.
I guess that would be a pretty easy setup. But, I mean, that is another source, although I don't think it's the main source of volatility in the market. You think about basic economic indicators, and we went through some of these earlier in the show. They don't really give you heartburn, right?
No.
The fundamentals seem solid.
Absolutely. The economic picture as a whole still, that's the one thing you can't blame the volatility on.
Yeah, we still have expectations, 2.7% GDP growth in 2018, 2.4% in 2019, maybe 2% flat in 2020. Last number we got
2.9.
Yeah, I mean,
Unemployment's low, as we spoke about.
Right.
Manufacturing services sectors look strong.
Yep. Oil and gas is not very expensive, although we have seen gas prices at the pump rise a little bit lately. The basic economic indicators that we watch most closely are supportive of growth.
Absolutely.
Other thing is, how about market valuation? I've talked about this quite a bit. And in this volatility, as well as during a time when we've seen earnings grow pretty significantly, fourth quarter earnings for the S&P 500 were up over 14%, about 14.5%. At the same time, you have this volatility, the market pulls back. We're still just shy of 30% premium if you just look at the trailing price to earnings ratio.
So forward looking looks a little more attractive. And we actually, Jacob and I had this conversation just a little while ago. I said to him, you know, on a forward basis, the market trades 17 times earnings. You know, it's really come down a lot. And he says, yeah, that's based on 30% earnings growth.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that
I looked
that
at
we
today,
talked
Nick.
About earlier. I have it right here.
29.2%, I think it was today. S&P 500 expectations for the next 12 months.
And I just don't see that happening.
It's unbelievable. I mean, 14.5% in the fourth quarter was pretty good.
And that's what they're expecting
for
Q1, so we'll start seeing those numbers trickle in here in the coming weeks.
I mean, we're talking about double that.
I know.
In a 12-month span. So what have we got? If you ask me, we've got ourselves set up for potential disappointment. Our expectations are still really high. Now, the impact to tax reform is the huge unknown there.
Yeah, and I think if you take a step back, I mean, it kind of all makes sense. We've got a lot of question marks here. Everything looks pretty positive overall, but I mean, the range of outcomes, I mean, if you're an analyst, if you're in this market trying to make decisions, there's a good bit of uncertainty. You're talking about, we're getting away from what's been a steady trend and trying to maybe have this expansionary fiscal policy. At the same time, you have a contractionary monetary policy. You've got tariffs. You've got a lot of different things going on overall. So it's kind of hard. I mean, we've got a 30% earnings target. I wouldn't be shocked if we beat it. I wouldn't be shocked if we missed it.
Right.
I mean, there's no telling. There's no telling.
No doubt.
Really.
Well, Jacob, you brought up a good point. How about tightening? We've got the Fed doing two things right now to tighten in monetary policy.
Right.
We've got rates increasing, which, you know, they've been widely announced and expected. The market's still giving us an expectation in June. In June, we'll see another. Probably in September, another. And then at last time I looked, and it's been a week or so, you know, I didn't see anything until maybe early 2019. So maybe two more this year. But in the background,
something else is going on.
So when they shrink that balance sheet, that's a tightening, a different form of tightening. We haven't seen that before. And that, to me, actually adds to those unknowns that you just mentioned.
Right.
And those are the ones, when you've never seen something before, those are the kind that actually scare me most. So what is quantitative tightening? Nick, you already mentioned it. It's basically
reducing the size of the balance sheet.
Yeah, and the way they're doing that is allowing those bonds that they purchased during quantitative easing. They were a buying force, creating demand, which drove prices higher on bonds and drove their yields lower. They wanted the lower yields, and that's the way that they were able to do it once we got to basically zero on the overnight lending rate. The only piece that they could manage beyond that, or at least the one that they went to, was go to a market-related way to lower interest rates. So in doing just the opposite, we're doing just the opposite to the yield on those bonds, right? While we're not selling, which would be worse, at least the demand that we were creating is gone. So, we've got interest rates now seeming to rise until we have these fits of volatility, and then we see everybody do the old flight to safety trick, right? You sell off your equities real quick and you buy some bonds so that you protect your asset values on the downside. But that hasn't been working perfectly either.
No.
Quite often we've seen both sell off.
And that's when we saw our first bit of volatility this year, that's exactly what happened.
Right. We've had what was a pretty nice inverse relationship between equities and bonds for, decades now. And we're starting to see some of that reverse of late. And I think it's to do with the expansionary fiscal policy, the Fed tightening. And And to be quite honest, I feel like the Fed was kind of in a wait and see mode. But now that we have, you know, tax reform and it feels like the economy is heating up a little bit, a lot of investors are asking, well, does the Fed get aggressive? And it is a scary market to be in bonds now.
I mean,
right.
It's not as – it doesn't feel as comfortable going out, you know, 10, 30 years on these bonds. And to boot, you've got LIBOR up, you know, more than the Fed funds rate lately. So any company that's operating on kind of a revolving credit, you know, LIBOR plus a spread, Vero rate, a lot of that – that's
cost
definitely tightening the credit environment overall.
Absolutely. Yeah, their cost of borrowing, as you said, Nick, is increasing. And potentially at a time, I mean, if we did see some juice in the economy because the tax reform took off, we could see inflation under these certain circumstances as well. So all things considered, it's just a really strange time. I made the case for a long time that fiscal policy was so difficult for corporations that the only thing that was saving it was monetary policy. Now we seem to be getting juice on the fiscal side to some degree in some ways, and we're actually getting monetary policy that's slowing things down. So, when you look at what's going on, it doesn't seem like the two are working in tandem for sure. And who knows which is going to win out. And like I say, even when you just look at fiscal policy, it looks as if, you know, many of the enacted details that we're seeing, like tax reform, are beneficial to the economy and economic growth. And yet when you take a little bit of a step back and you see tariffs, well, that's not beneficial at all.
Right.
Let's take a real quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap this up and answer a few questions. You're listening to Money Talks.
All material presented is compiled from sources believed to be reliable and current, but accuracy cannot be guaranteed. The contents are intended for general information purposes only. Information provided should not be the sole basis in making any decisions and is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified professional, such as a tax consultant, insurance advisor, or attorney. Although this material is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information with respect to the subject matter, it may not apply in all situations. This is not to be construed as an offer to buy or sell any financial instruments. It is not our intention to state, indicate, or imply in any manner that current or past results are indicative of future profitability or expectations. Portfolio holdings discussed are subject to change. There is no guarantee that in the future these securities will be held in Hensler accounts. As with all investments, there are associated inherent risks. Please obtain and review all financial material carefully before investing. Hensler is not licensed to offer or sell insurance products. This overview is not to be construed as an offer to purchase any insurance products.